Welcome to the Conestoga Podcast. This is program 23 for January 30th, 2007. Conestoga is Oklahoma's largest literary science fiction and fantasy convention, and it's time for Battle of the Toastmasters. Conestoga 9 set a new standard for Toastmaster speeches. Author Brad Denton gave a memorable performance honoring 9's guest of honor, George R. Martin. For Conestoga 10, author and current SFWA president Robin Wayne Bailey had his work cut out for him to toast 10's guest of honor, David Drake. Robin managed to rise to the occasion. It was tough judging the two performances separately, so we thought it would be fun to pit these two Toastmasters against each other. Are you ready to find out how it all went down at Conestoga 10? Well, get ready to rumble. Welcome to the Conestoga Podcast. This is your podcast host, Chris Murley. Along with Elspeth Bloodgood for the first time, we've both been doing interviews, but this time we're going to do
something. Torture the Toastmasters.
Bradley Denton and Robin Wayne Bailey. Robin Wayne Bailey hails from North Kansas City, Missouri. I'm going to laugh doing this, but he is the current SFWA president and the author of Shadow Dance and the current Dragonkin novels. Brad Denton hails from Austin, Texas, is currently out as Laughing Boy and is also well known for Blackburn and Buddy Holly is Live and Well and Living in Ganymede. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And you're just a past Toastmaster, so we don't know if you still have your
has
edge.
Has been, as we say in the business.
Or a once and always, a once and forever. We're really glad to have you join us.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to
we
be back.
We decided that it would be, you know, fun to put you guys on the spot and make you entertain us with very, very little preparation. So we've prepared a couple of questions for you. Just a kind of a warm-up thing. What I want is whoever has the answer, the right answer first, I'd like you to buzz in.
Just say buzz.
All right.
There's no bell. They left it at registration. True or false, Stanislaw Lem wrote about the space pilot Kinsman.
No.
No.
No, false.
Buzz.
So, but see, sorry, you got to learn. I got it. One buzzes. I call on you.
Sorry.
Okay. I tell you what we need to do before we continue with these questions. I think we ought to allow our audience... and actually, I'm going to say the reason why we are doing this, I originally going to call it Battle of the Toastmasters, but I think we're going to call it Toastmaster Deathmatch because we only have two contestants. And it's all Brad Denton's fault for his amazing Toastmaster speech last
what
year.
What on earth are you talking about? Why is this my fault?
Because it's always your fault.
Now, Lee Martindale was supposed to be here, and I don't know what happened, but she's not here. And
I was
going to use Lee as a buffer between me and Robin, but...
So well, alas... Lee has done Lee has done a yeoman's job this weekend, and unfortunately, she's just not able to make it this afternoon.
I know.
It's just going to be between you two, which
great.
I think is well. It'll be interesting. So, hang on just a second here.
Which is the more amusing thing?
Okay, I screwed up, and we'll start over.
No, leave this in.
Okay, so Robin, tell me about Brad. What should all of us know about Brad Denton?
What should you all know about Brad Denton?
More tequila,
that he's
please.
A little green kid from Eudora, Kansas, when I first met him. Shy, easy to blush, easy to embarrass, fun to embarrass. And you should also know that he's turned into one hell of a fine writer, and I wouldn't be mean to him for anything in the world.
And not anything at all?
Immensely.
Nothing. How long have you known each other?
That would have been 1985, I think. Yeah, it would have been 1985.
Brad had just sold his first short story.
Yeah, it was 84 then. It was 84 when I first came to a conquest. I first met you at a conquest.
You came to an honors banquet, I believe, was your first event. And sat over in a corner. The other thing you should know about Brad is he suffers from sometimers. Sometimes he forgets everything.
That's true. So 22 years is the answer.
22 years. Okay. So tell me a little bit about Robin, Brad.
Well, when I found out that it was just going to be Robin and I on the panel, I had to jot down a few notes because, as Robin says, I tend to forget things. And it's easier if I have a few notes written down. What can I say about Robin Bailey that hasn't already been written on the men's room wall of every truck stop on I-70? But seriously, Robin is one of my oldest and dearest friends in the field, and he is in large part responsible for my introduction to and induction into the science fiction and fantasy community. So live with that. Hardworking, charismatic,
can I interrupt this at any point?
No.
I really want to know what you've been doing in every truck stop along I-70, reading all the walls.
I hear things. I just hear things, honest. Hardworking, charismatic, filthy-minded, shameless are just a few of the words that describe Robin W. Bailey. And somehow, back when we did first meet, back in the mid-'80s, I became the third wheel in the Robin Bailey Steve Gould juggernaut. Is this not working?
No, it's on.
Okay.
Sorry, I was trying not to disturb you.
That's all right. Somehow I became the third wheel in the Robin Bailey Steve Gould juggernaut that terrorized science fiction and fantasy like a couple of rabid koala bears during the late 80s. Then I moved to Texas, and I sort of dropped out of traveling fandom for a while. I stuck pretty close to home. But in recent years, I found myself missing everyone terribly. And one of the people I missed the most was Robin. One reason is the fact that he's always an absolute professional in his work. And I feel like hanging around him, I become better at the business part of being a writer than I am if I don't hang around him. But at the same time, he never takes himself too seriously, which was an important lesson for me, and I think an important lesson for all writers trying to make their way in this world to learn. Always take your work seriously, but never take yourself seriously, which is a lesson I learned directly from Robin Bailey. Because if you do take yourself too seriously, as I initially did, then Robin Bailey will paint a target on your ass. And fire barbed bolts of prurient wit at you for the rest of your life.
Have some tequila, Brad.
Word of warning, these microphones pick up everything, especially when you bang the table.
Okay. Well, so that was lovely. That, you know, almost brought a tear to my eye. But it does show a couple of different things about your styles, which is, Brad, you prepare and write things down, and Robin, you wing it.
Robin prepared. He brought the tequila.
He brought the tequila.
That's right. I brought the props. I brought the flowers to butter up the women. I brought...
Well, I do notice that there is a Superman on the table here with the microphones and the Jose Cuervo black and the red carnations.
You just never know what you're going to need. You can always count on needing alcohol. You can always count on needing something for the audience. So this flower is for you.
Aw, thank you very much.
And I have one for Brad, the other lady in the room, too. And the doll is just, you never know what you might do with a doll.
Well, so... Can I
pass that to her?
Sure.
Okay. Right now. So tell me what you would say in response to that lovely sort of eulogy, except you're not dead.
I would say, I love you too, Brad. On the lips, baby. Gosh. I don't know. I really admire Brad. There's no getting around this. It's going to turn into not a death fest, but a love match. When Brad came to the Kansas City Science Fiction Group for the first time and got involved, I didn't know any of his work. I think Chuck Baker brought you down, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And he had sold a story, but we hadn't seen it yet. And the first story is a fun story, and I thought, okay, he's going to be sort of a humorous science fiction writer. It involves aliens, crab aliens from outer space coming, and these record store clerks are they're finding the aliens' messages on vinyl discs, if I remember, and playing them backwards, and they decide they'll meet the aliens with buckets of hot butter. And I thought, okay, that's where he's going. You know, he's going to be this kind of a sort of gonzo, funny, humorous writer. And then his next book came out, Rack and Roll, and it was just short of brilliant, but close enough not to quibble about. It was another gonzo piece of work, you know, sort of an alternate history in which Theodore Roosevelt chokes on a chicken bone and it changes the whole course of the future. And but then he came back with Buddy Holly is Alive and Well on Ganymede, and he he'd crossed that border from being close to brilliant to being brilliant. And at that point, I had to suck him into doing all the silliness that Steve Gould and I were involved in at that point, because otherwise people would have noticed how fucking jealous I became of Brad Denton at that point. You know, he went on. He's received all sorts of awards, all sorts of recognition. And you're not my groupie. You're not my pupil or anything like that. But, you know, I've seen you grow from... watched your whole career grow, and it's been amazing to watch.
Well, tell me about how much community is important and what fandom means to writers as they're developing and how you think that contributes to the sort of small field that where everyone kind of knows everybody.
I've come to realize just in the last few years that it was more important than I initially thought. I mean, first it was just fun to go over to the Kansas City Science Fiction Fantasy Society and hang out with Robin and go to conventions and you know run around with him and Steve like the Three Musketeers, and it was just a lot of fun. Then I had to move away. Barb went to graduate school down in Texas, and we moved away, and money got a little tight, so we just didn't go anyplace very much for a while. And just in the last few years, I just missed everybody so bad and was feeling sort of lost and having trouble writing and feeling a little creatively empty. And just early last year, I just said, I've got to start getting back to the old stomping ground conventions again and see everybody and just see how everybody's doing, because I was missing everybody. And since I've done that, you know, since seeing Robin again and various other people as well, Jim and Paula Murray and Keith Stokes and just all the people that I used to hang out with in Kansas City and all of the Oklahoma fans also who I initially met when they came to Kansas City, I've just felt this creative spark start to flare again, and I'm getting more work done, and I just feel better. So apparently the community aspect of the field is much more important than I initially thought. And it also helps to have people that you admire and look up to. I mean, you know, again, we're going to be veering dangerously close to a love fest rather than a death match.
That's all right. I got more questions.
But when I first met Robin, he was already published. Either Frost had either come out or it was coming out very soon. I think Frost was out.
Yeah. I think maybe even my second book.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. The second book in the Frost trilogy was already out. And so I admired and still do admire Robin immensely. Not only was he a great writer, but he was so professional and seemed to know so much what he was doing, knew everybody in the field, knew what to do, knew what not to do, and I was incredibly green and knew nothing about the business aspect of things, knew none of the editors, knew virtually no other writers. The only other writer I knew was my professor at KU, James Gunn. I knew him because he was my professor. But it was in large part thanks to Robin that I met a lot of other writers and editors in the field, because I'd go to these conventions where Robin was at, and we'd go around to parties, and he'd introduce me to everybody.
I took him by the hand and led him to every truck stop on
I-70. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to interrupt right now. Right. Another question, testing your knowledge. You said you didn't know anything when you got started. We're going to see what you learned. Remember to buzz in. True or false, Hugo Gernsback invented the term science fiction?
Buzz.
I think Brad got it.
False.
True. Hugo.
He called it science fiction. He called it scientifiction.
Okay. Then scientifiction.
Yes, that's my bad. I guess she couldn't read my handwriting.
He's got terrible handwriting. See, I don't know any of this stuff. You guys are teaching me stuff.
But
we'll give you another
magazine
one
in which he coined the term.
Okay. True or false? Isaac Asimov codified the three laws of robotics.
Buzz. Which one of us?
Brad.
False. It was John W. Campbell.
Hey, you are good. You've learned stuff. You know things.
Robin knew that one, too, though.
You know things. Okay, we're going to have another one. This one's really, really, really hard. Roses are red as violets are to... Roses are too red as violets are to... See, this stumps, the stumping, buzz, the stumping part. Buzz. You know all the science fiction stuff, but the easy things.
We're looking for the trick.
There is no trick.
We always suspect a trick.
Okay, we'll try another one.
This is another, thing that happens after several years of being in the science fiction village. You get very suspicious.
Okay,
if
anything looks too easy,
it probably is.
Well, we're just lulling you. I'm just lulling you here. Salieri is to Mozart is what Brad Denton is to
Buzz.
I think that's Robin.
A guitar.
No, this actually refers back to...
It's actually George R. R. Martin is the correct response.
Okay, why?
He needs to tell this story on himself.
Yeah, that's right. You were not kind of stoned the last year.
See, it's not fair. This was a trick.
Yeah, yes. It was a trick. Part of my Toastmaster presentation last year was pointing out that in the field of science fiction, I play the role of Salieri, you know, the guy who is almost good enough, you know, not quite good enough. And George R. R. Martin, who was, of course, last year's guest of honor, is Mozart in comparison.
Got it.
And it has to do with too many notes. Yes. You know, if you can write books by the pound... Mozart,
but
so many
George
notes.
But George R. R. Martin who is Salieri.
Well, for the purposes of my presentation, He was definitely Mozart.
He was very wonderful. We were so grateful to have him, and it was a very funny Toastmaster speech. We got a question in earlier today from Jody Lynn Nye, and she wanted to know, speaking of Toastmaster speeches, how much of your own ego do you put into your Toastmaster speech?
Are you asking both of us?
I'm going to ask Robin first, and then I'll let you talk next.
Well, this is the first, you know, of all the Toastmaster gigs I've done, this is the first one where I've been sort of asked to have prepared or some sort of speech prepared. You know, for many, most of the Toastmaster gigs, I think people just sort of walk in and they kind of wing it and they introduce the guests, and that's pretty much it. But I had been warned that Brad had really prepared a knockout presentation, and when my instructions came for my Toastmaster duties, they said, "Your Toastmaster presentation." So I thought, oh my God, what am I going to do? And I really didn't know till I got here. How much of your ego goes into it? Well, hell, a lot. I mean, it's all ego. You know, this, when you're asked to perform like that, then you'd better be ready to step up and perform. And any performance is pure ego. Yeah, there's no getting around that. It's pure ego.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I mean, clearly, the whole Salieri versus Mozart thing that I did last year, clearly that was a joke, but not really. It's the sort of thing that clearly I feel a little inadequate in comparison to a lot of writers in the field, certainly George, Robin included, a lot of them. And I've even though I'm 48 years old now, I've always felt like the little kid in their wake. And when it was time to prepare a Toastmaster speech, I was thinking about that and wondering, as long as I'm feeling that way, why not have some fun with how I actually feel among all these people and, you know, present myself as a bitter, jealous, almost good enough sort of author. So that's what I did.
Well, I've got another question here. We can buzz in again. We'll see how much you've learned coming to Conestoga. The question is, blood is its analogy. Analogy is the category. Blood is to vampires is what barbecue sauce is to
Buzz.
Brad.
Anybody from Kansas City.
Oh, Bubba's. Bubba's. Selena Rosen's Bubba's.
What are Bubba's? What is this thing with Bubba's down
Bubba's
here?
Of the apocalypse. It's
the 10th anniversary of Yard Dog Press. We should have been looking for that.
Yeah. Okay. I got another one. This one's loaded for, it's got Robin's name all over it.
Uh-oh.
Being another analogy, being president of, or I guess this is a simile because it has the word like in it. Being president of CEFWA is like herding what?
Buzz.
Yeah.
Like herding
cats. Yes.
Or ants, actually.
Ants?
Yeah, ants.
So how does
Cassettes. Stop me before I continue.
this is going on the web, you know.
I know.
No, part of what is important to give back, giving professional writers go to cons to give back to their fans and to get energy from their fans. And one of the things that you've been doing is giving back by being part of CEFWA and working with all of that. Tell me a little bit about how that works and how you work that into your days and nights. And
you know, I talked about this during my interview with Keith Stokes yesterday. When I published my first novel, it got caught up in the collapse of Timescape Books. And to make a long story short, it was CEFWA, basically, their grievance committees, their very activist approach to the industry, that saved my bacon at that time. And I've always been grateful for that and felt like you have to pay that forward. And I've tried to do that by helping other writers in a wide variety of ways. And I have kind of, I don't know if abrasive personality is the right word. I'm sure it is sometimes, but where do I want to go with that? I'm not so worried about my career that I can't jeopardize it on behalf of other writers. You know, I know that I'm good enough that somebody will publish me, that I can continue to work in this field. And I've never had much of a tolerance for crap, and that includes crap coming from editors or publishers. A lot of writers don't have that comfort level. And I'm really a very big believer in unions and the power of collective bargaining, and that's what CEFWA is about. If you can't stand up for yourself, there are 1,500 other writers out there who are willing to stand up for you.
So it ends up being more about community.
Definitely, yeah. It comes right back to community. And I'm very proud to be part of that community.
Well, that's really nice. See, we haven't got you guys with your hands at each other's throats hardly at all, even on the buzzing.
Well, I could provoke some.
You could?
Yeah.
Have you had an opportunity to get benefit from CEFWA on that end?
I'm actually not a member of CEFWA right now. I was a member of CEFWA for the first 10 years of my career, and then I dropped out. But Robin is this weekend making me feel very guilty about that. So I'm going to talk to him some more later, and I'm thinking about rejoining now.
Have some more tequila, Brad.
Okay, true or false? We'll see if you learned anything from last night's play. Robbie the Robot's first appearance was in Forbidden Planet. True or false?
True.
Yes.
Buzz.
Buzz.
True.
Yeah.
What was his second appearance in?
I don't know.
The Invisible Boy.
The Invisible Boy, really?
Made a couple of years later. They had the robot sitting around in the prop warehouse, and they decided they needed to do something with it again. And there's a movie called The Invisible Boy in which they bring Robbie back out as an evil personality.
Oh, my. The things you learn.
Come to Conestoga. It's an education.
Yeah. True or false? We have to remember to buzz in because I forget. I have, you know. What did you call that thing when people, for short timers?
Sometimers.
Sometimers. Must be bad. True or false? Clifford Simak's City Stories were about a future where cats evolved to talk.
Buzz. False.
False.
It was dogs.
It was dogs. We're very much about dogs here. There's many running around downstairs. Yeah. True or false? Melvin Belli, an actor and a lawyer, appeared in the Star Trek episode And the Children Shall Lead and was Jimmy and Tammy Faye Baker's lawyer. True or
Buzz.
False?
I have no idea, but it's got to be true.
It is absolutely the God's own truth. How could
you make that up if it weren't true?
Melvin Belli. Yeah, lawyer, Star Trek, Jim and Tammy Faye. Which one is closer to fantasy? I don't know. True or false? Robert Heinlein wrote Stranger in a Strange Land.
Buzz.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, he was the master. So if you got to ask each other questions, what would you ask? What do you want to know from each other? You've known each other a long time. What do you want them to?
I think I would ask Robin. I think I would ask Robin now. You've written a lot of different kinds of fiction. Right now, if there was a huge pot of money that fell out of the sky right into your lap, and you would never have to worry about what the marketplace did or what editors wanted ever again, what would you write?
I would probably still write for the marketplace.
Because you want readers.
Because I want readers.
Yeah.
You know, one of my, you had James Gunn as a writing professor.
Right.
I had Dean Ng as a communications professor.
Oh, no kidding.
And I think one of the important, one of the most important lesson that James Gunn taught you was sell it twice.
Right.
You know, the most important lesson that Dean Ng taught me was sugarcoat a message and sneak it in on them. You know, and no matter what kind of fluff I write, you know, whether it's humorous fantasy or packaged work or something, there's something subversive in there at some, at, you know, at the heart of that work. And I enjoy that.
You still want to change people's way of thinking. You don't just want to entertain them.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
You're always trying to, as you say, subversively get in there and twist the neurons.
That's right.
Yeah.
So what do you want to leave them with, Brad?
I feel very much the same way Robin does.
He's a subversive at heart.
Yeah.
He wears his subversiveness out on his sleeve.
I do. I always want, of course a writer's first job is to entertain, but I really want, in a very similar way, I'm going to use a different metaphor though, I always want to sneak up on the reader and to have them by the throat before they know I've got them. And by the time I've got them there, they can't get away. You know, I want the reader to, you know, Robin's going to make so much hay out of this, but I want the reader to ultimately have to surrender to what I'm doing.
And how do you know when that happens? What comes back to you when you write for the market, or when you're going to get them to come with you someplace that they might not want to go? How do you know you got them? What's the payback?
Well, the raw horror of being a day-to-day writer is that you don't know immediately. You know if you found an editor who wants to publish it. You know if you found a publisher who's willing to let the editor publish it, but you don't know for a long time whether anything you did was successful for the reader. And this is one of the reasons why getting to come to conventions, and one of the reasons why I've wanted to start coming to conventions again and have been, is because you get to hear people tell you what your work did or didn't do for them.
One of the truths I think about writers is that at heart, we're all performers. No matter how seriously or not seriously we take our work, at heart, we're all performers. Now, with writing, the feedback is never immediate. You always have to wait that period of time. You know, you finish a book, it may be a year before the book comes out. It may be longer than that before you get the first inkling of feedback. Have you done a good job? Have you done a bad job? So it's interesting to me that so many writers perform in some other arena. And Brad and I are both musicians, or at least I used to be a musician. Brad still is. And I think we gravitate toward that because there the feedback is immediate. You know, so it satisfies the same impulse, but one satisfies it much more quickly. writing is always a long-term thing. How do I know if I've reached my audience? I know it with mail. Fan mail, I know it by the reaction I get at conventions. I know it by the number of books that are selling. You know, book scan will give me feedback if nothing else. But it's
so do you check your numbers on Amazon regularly?
No, the numbers on Amazon don't mean squat, right. And they're so easy to manipulate. I don't pay any attention to those numbers at all.
And book scan doesn't even take Amazon into account,
right.
I understand. So, yeah.
Okay.
Amazon's kind of a separate deal that has to be taken with a huge grain of salt.
Okay. So you've been going to conventions for a long time. I know you've both Toastmastered here. Or have you been Toastmaster elsewhere?
Yeah, sure. Lots of other places.
And what was your best?
What was my best? Well, maybe last night.
By the way, I recorded Robin's Toastmaster speech this year, and
And we may talk you out of it.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to get it into a form where I can email it, either email it to Robin in an MP3 file or burn it to disk and send it to you. and then I'll let Robin decide whether he wants to release it to the world at large.
Burn it, yeah.
I've Toastmastered elsewhere too. I think the first time I was ever Toastmaster was at a Conquest. That was a long time ago. That was back in the mid-90s sometime. I was Toastmaster at Conquest. And I was also Toastmaster at ArmadilloCon 1 year, which I did a much better job at than my first time. It's one of those things where you get better, or at least I hope you get better, as you do it. You certainly get more comfortable doing it. And that tends to make you better when you're feeling more comfortable. So my second one at ArmadilloCon was much better than my first. Last year here at Conestoga was actually only my third time being Toastmaster. And because of who the other guests were, I wanted to pull out as many stops as I could think of, because Jim and Paula Murray were old friends of mine from Kansas City, and Brad Foster's an old friend of mine and one of my favorite artists, and George Martin is somebody who was always one of my iconic heroes as a writer, and was also somebody who was very friendly to me over the years as I'd see him. So I wanted to really stick it to each one of them if I could.
And that's when it's really worthwhile to be Toastmaster. Every now and then I've been Toastmaster at a con where I really don't know anybody,
right,
and it's hard to be on your game in that situation. But Friday night here, there were so many people I knew who were going to be in the audience.
Yeah.
And I skewered as many of them as I could in the course of the evening.
Some a little more than others.
Yeah, but you like to be skewered deep and hard.
Apparently so.
But Steve Pagel was there, and he'd made the big mistake of leaving his shorts around. And Selena and Lynn were right up there on the side, and various other friends were scattered in the audience. And, you know, I said earlier that, you know, it's all ego, but while at the same time you're exercising your ego, the Toastmaster learns to really spread it around.
Yeah.
You know, and if there are people in the audience that you can draw in and make part of the act, it's just get everybody involved. It's so much more fun and more lively.
Absolutely.
Well, that seems to be sort of the trend at fan-ish conventions or literary cons, is that you're supposed to make your own fun. You know, everyone gets together to see people they No, and
that's
that
not
they
just
like
at conventions. That's everywhere. You've got to make your own fun.
That's another thing I learned from Robin early on.
If you're not having a good time, whose fault is it?
If you're not having a good time, just go find Robin and he'll make some fun for you.
Okay. Well, speaking of Selena, and I didn't write this one, but we have another analogy. Selena Rosen is to book selling what a pimp is to a
buzz.
Robin?
A business proposition.
All those t-shirts on all her authors, all her yard dog authors for the 10th anniversary running around, they all say writer ho. So we were looking for the word ho, so I'm taking like 500 points.
So this is why she wears that hat around. That's her pimp hat, isn't
it? I guess so. And that's kind of been fun this weekend, to have everybody celebrating lasting this long and still being in the business and still standing on their feet, you know, with Misha Merlin, Steve Pagel, and Selena and Lynn, who are, you know, still running that micro press and making it happen.
Well, it's a testament to a convention fandom, because those are both presses that are largely dependent on the fan base that you get at Conestoga and other conventions in the region.
And, you know, so if there are folks hanging out here who just, you know, found your name or were listening to you because they liked your work or something, is there something you'd like to leave them with? Because we're about ready to wrap it up.
Oh, something for them to look for of ours? Or
something for them to look for, what you've got going, what's coming up.
Okay. Well, everybody has a website now. Mine is www.bradleydenton.net, and there are free stories, free MP3 clips, and links to where you can find all of my books, of course. My most recent book was last year, was a novel called Laughing Boy. and I have stories coming out hither and yon all the time, and I announce those on the website. Okay. So BradleyDenton.net, I guess, is what I would suggest for people to check out.
Is there anything that you've got in a novel form that's coming up soonish or so?
I am working on a short novel now that, if I get it finished in time, will be out from Subterranean Press early next year.
Wonderful. Robin?
Well, my Dragonkin books are generally available. They probably have to be ordered at this point. But I'm really pleased with those. Those are young adult novels. Young adult is almost a misnomer. I wrote them specifically so that parents might read them aloud to kids. So they work on one level for the adults, but they work on a different level for the kids, if I pulled it off right, and the readership seems to think I did. So I'd be happy to have them pick those up. I have a novelette coming out in an anthology next year called, the anthology is called Heroes in Training, and the novelette is called The Children's Crusade, and it's basically deals with some repercussions on kids of the bombing of Baghdad by American aircraft, and has a lot of things to say about terrorism and the whole war in Iraq thing. I'm extremely proud of that story. Beyond that, I'm working on a Japanese fantasy series right now, and I have no idea when it will be out, but I'm writing it basically at my own pace and not rushing this. This is what I was talking about last night, about moving away from the packaging work and writing in other people's work and finally doing what I really want to do instead for myself.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm going to look forward to seeing both of it. Oh, you... Brad got his plug-in for his webpage. You need to do that as well, Robin.
Oh, I also want to add, just real quick, I'll have a short story collection out from Selena Rosen next year.
Wonderful.
From Yard Dog. They're doing a collection of just my science fiction stories to be released at the Heinlein Centennial.
Oh, terrific.
And my webpage is http://home.earthlink.net/RobinWayneBailey. Just Google, it'll turn up.
We'll put a link on the Conestoga site so Super. People can get there.
We'll have some interesting show notes.
Yeah. This has been wonderful. You guys are so gracious, and thank you so much for answering my silly questions and having a good time with this. It's been wonderful to learn more about what makes you guys tick. So thank you very much.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah,
thanks for having me to Conestoga, 2 years in a row. I mean, I want to come back every year. It's been great.
Yeah, I want to come back and be Toastmaster every year and have Brad Denton in the front row.
Great. More tequila, please.
Are you going to have a PowerPoint presentation?
Now there's a thought. Glory holes we have known.
Oh, my.
Well, this
and is... that, ladies and gentlemen, is Robin Bailey in a nutshell.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that didn't quite turn out the way I intended, but we sure had a lot of fun chatting with Robin and Brad, and we hoped you enjoyed it. See our show notes for links to each of their respective websites. I think it's time to remind our listeners that Conestoga 11 will be held July 20th through the 22nd, 2007, and is fast approaching. And for those planning to attend, we expect a huge turnout. Why? Because our guest of honor is Laurel K. Hamilton, our artist guest of honor is John Picasso, our toastmistress is Elizabeth Moon, and our fan guests of honor are Richard and Michelle Zellick. And see our website for more information about the golden ticket and what is planned for the convention. Looking forward to seeing you all at Conestoga 11. So thanks for listening until our next Conestoga podcast. For more information, our web address is www.sftulsa.org or send an email to conestoga@sftulsa.org. Questions about our podcast may be sent to podcast@sftulsa.org. Please send us an email or put a comment on the website and let us know what you thought of this podcast.